Hi, I'm Jennifer from the Talking Information Center. Today is Monday, April 13th, and I'll be reading from the Attleboro Sun Chronicle. Housing Development for Older Adults Planned on Tiffany Street in Attleboro by Rihanna Watkins. A small residential neighborhood for aging and handicapped residents is being proposed at a former junkyard at 496 Tiffany Street. The developer, County Street Royalty Corp., is proposing a cluster of 11 duplexes for a total of 22 market-rate units to be sold on the 4.12-acre parcel, accommodating around 55 residents. The duplexes would be set back from the main road along an internal driveway with an entrance on Tiffany Street. The parcel currently consists of some wetlands and upland on which the duplexes would be built. Another section of the site has one residential home fronting County Street on a 4.4-acre parcel, which would remain in place and be subdivided from the portion being developed. The land is currently zoned as single residence, but the developer is asking for a special permit for residential cluster dwellings, primarily for elderly and handicapped individuals. Each of the duplexes would have its own private garage and exterior deck. They would also come with significant accessibility measures, according to the developer's proposal. The proposal also states that development will maintain compatibility with surrounding infrastructure, including building heights to scale, and plenty of green space remaining on the premises. The developers say there will be no undue traffic congestion or impaired pedestrian safety. The development would connect to city water and sewer, but not overload it, developers of the proposal says. Planning and Development Director Gary Arasian said he is in support of the project as it offers a type of housing the city needs, senior housing. Former Attleboro girls lacrosse coach Shane Collins dies of cancer by Tyler Hitu. Shane Collins, a former head coach of Attleboro High School's girls lacrosse team, has died. He was 48. The Attleboro Lacrosse Association announced his death Sunday. Collins endured an on-and-off battle with cancer since 2022. He joined the Attleboro girls lacrosse program in 2023, where he coached his daughter Amelia, who is now a senior with the program. Since his departure from the team prior to the 2025 season, Carrie Beeland has taken over. It is with heavy hearts and deep sadness that we face the passing of our beloved coach Shane, the association wrote in a Facebook post. Coach Shane was so much more than a coach to our Attleboro lacrosse family. He was a guiding light, a steady voice, and a constant source of encouragement to every player he worked with. He gave his time, energy, and his heart to this program and to the girls he mentored, always believing in them, pushing them, and celebrating them. Attleboro Athletic Director Mark Houle said Collins's passion for the program positively impacted the team. I'm saddened to hear about the passing of AHS former girls lacrosse coach Shane Collins. He was passionate about coaching lacrosse and positively impacted our program, thoughts, and support are with the Collins family and our AHS community, Houle said. Collins graduated from Bishop Feehan High School in Attleboro in 1995, where he was a member of the Hall of Fame 1994 state championship baseball team, and was an active presence in the local lacrosse community with Titans Youth Lacrosse, which feeds into Attleboro's high school lacrosse programs. He was also a volunteer assistant with Wheaton College's lacrosse program. Beyond his work in sports, he was a devoted husband to Bethany Mary Collins, a loving father and a friend, those who knew him said. His impact in the lacrosse community and in everyday life is one that will be remembered for a long time, the Lacrosse Association said. The impact he made on our community is immeasurable, and the lessons he taught will live on in every athlete who had the privilege to know him, Attleboro Lacrosse Association wrote, "Our lacrosse community will stand together to honor his memory, support one another, and carry forward the legacy of kindness, strength, and passion that Coach Shane leaves behind." Norton voters agree to tax hike to pay for new school roof, by Madison Dunphy. Voters on Saturday approved a temporary tax hike to fund a full $11.4 million replacement of the Norton Middle School roof, while also reelecting Select Board member Denise Luciano and school committee member Justin Callahan. The roof project passed 620 to 563 and will be funded through a tax hike exempt from state tax levy limiting Proposition 2.5. Early estimates project the increase will cost the typical homeowner between $36 and $65 annually over the 20-year bond. State aid will cover over half the cost of the roof. The Massachusetts School Building Authority has approved a nearly 56% reimbursement rate for the project. Honorary Mayor of Norton, Peter Wiggins, said he projected the tax hike would pass. Luciano, who has served on the select board since 2023, narrowly won re-election with 585 votes, defeating former select board member and Economic Development Commission member Michael Toole, who received 566. Luciano had won her seat over Toole 3 years ago. "I think the election this year was good and quiet, in which everyone was really respectful of each other," Luciano said. "It was close, but it was good." As she begins another three-year term, Luciano says she looks forward to continuing her work. "I look forward to serving with these fine gentlemen for another 3 years and hoping to continue to make positive improvements in town and make choices that are on behalf of the townspeople," Luciano said. For a three-year school committee seat, Callahan, who has served since 2023, defeated Walter Gonnett, Jr., 624 to 517. John Conway won re-election as town moderator with 879 votes, running unopposed. He has held the position since 2023. Planning board member Frank Kearns, who joined the board in 2025, won a two-year seat unopposed with 782 votes. James Chabot won an unopposed three-year seat on the Board of Assessors with 787 votes, replacing Michael Massoni, who did not seek re-election. Two three-year planning board seats had no official candidates. Write-in winners will be announced with the certified results Monday or Tuesday, Town Clerk Jill Seppa said. Incumbents Tim Griffin and Eric Norris didn't seek re-election. Voter turnout mirrored last year's local election, Seppa said. A total of 1,232 voters, 8.04% of Norton's 15,316 registered voters, cast ballots at Town Hall. In 2025, turnout was about 9% of 15,078 registered voters. "Because voter registration went up, it skewed the percentage a bit. But I would say we were about even with last year," Seppa said. Attleboro Garden Club cultivates community on group's 70th anniversary, by Riawan Watkins. Members of the Attleboro Garden Club find joy in soil and plants, sunshine and rain, clippings and cuttings. However, the heart of the club, which is celebrating its 70th anniversary this year, is community, camaraderie, and purpose, with each other and their city. The heart of the Garden Club is its civic organization, Club President Kathy Gariepi said. "It's there to make community that the community that you live in a better place." The club tends to several city gardens, including the Edward L. Anderson Rose Garden on Country Street, the garden at Attleboro Public Library, Gilbert Perry Square at the intersection of Park, Pleasant, and Emery Streets, and Katie's Garden at Capron Park Zoo in memory of Caitlin Griffin, a six-year-old Mansfield girl who was murdered by her father in 2009. Gariepi said these gardens were chosen as the club felt they were areas it could help augment the work of the city's forestry department. Each space also has a teachable element for club members and the public, Gariepi said. For example, public programs have been held at the Rose Garden to teach about appropriate roses for a New England climate and those resistant to diseases. At Gilbert Perry Square, the emphasis is on drought-tolerant, low-maintenance pollinator plants. Meeting once a month during the spring, fall, and winter seasons, the group brings in speakers for presentations on a wide variety of topics, including container gardens, herb gardens, fertilizer and pH of soil, managing bees and insects, old New England stone walls, native plant habitats, and plant photography. During the summer, the group takes a few months off of meetings to tend to their own gardens. Currently, the club boasts 65 members of all ages, many holding various roles, including a president who rotates every 2 to 3 years. The group takes field trips to various gardens and exhibitions throughout southern New England. Gariepi said that when the club first started, it was mainly retired women or those who stayed home. But about 20 years ago, when Gariepi was president the first time round, she implemented night meetings in addition to daytime gatherings to expand access to younger working women. Gariepi, 66, said they are a diverse group. "The women I've met have all been, first of all, incredibly intelligent," she said. "We have people who have been doctors, lawyers, scientists. They've worked at all sorts of major financial corporations. So we have a varied work background. A history of empowerment and leadership for women." When garden clubs began in the late 19th century, they were a mechanism for women to become leaders of their communities, influencing civic life and engaging in a world that gave them little means to do so outside their homes. The first garden club, the Ladies' Garden Club of Athens, Georgia, began in January 1891. It was formed by women in response to the many male-led horticultural societies and botany organizations that prevented women from participating. Several other garden clubs soon followed suit, making them a pillar of many sittings across the country. Garden clubs also operated in the context of the larger women's club movement during the same period. Women began forming clubs of all kinds to give themselves an outlet to educate each other and exercise advocacy on a number of issues. Together, women studied literature, science, and geography, advocated for child labor laws and the creation of libraries, and organized charity work for various causes. The club gave women a sense of leadership and autonomy, a way to connect with one another, share ideas and knowledge, and take it upon themselves to rise above an often stifling, male-dominated era. Gariepi said, "When Attleboro's Garden Club was founded in 1956, meetings took place at the Sweet Clubhouse, which was founded in the same year by Florence Hayward Sweet, the mother of Attleboro's first mayor in 1914, Harold E. Sweet. Her goal was to give women's clubs a designated place to meet in the city. The clubhouse was donated to the Attleboro Norton YMCA in 2021. In Attleboro, we've had a man or two join the garden club, and they're always welcome because the garden club is open to all," Gariepi said. Gariepi, a longtime city resident, said her passion for gardens began early in life when her great-grandmother taught her how to plant a seed and start a garden. When Gariepi, 66, changed careers 26 years ago, she revisited that passion and began exploring it more seriously. She took classes through the Massachusetts Horticultural Society, landscape design courses at Rhode Island School of Design, and Master Gardener courses. "I became a Master Gardener 26 years ago, and that changed everything," Gariepi said. Since then, she's worked in several top roles, including as a lead teacher for the Massachusetts Horticultural Society, education coordinator for Mass Audubon, was a past president of the Massachusetts Master Gardener Association and has lectured throughout New England for the past 25 years, in addition to becoming a member of the Attleboro Garden Club 36 years ago. She has also been a member of the city's Conservation Commission, where she currently serves as chair for years. Resident Dawn Bender, 49, who works as a bank business support manager, is one of the club's newest and youngest members, having joined 2 years ago. She said she came across the garden club at the flower show a few years back, and Gary Eppy encouraged her to attend a meeting. "I was just so busy raising my kids, I didn't have time for a lot of extracurriculars," Bender said. "So I had gone to the last meeting of the season, and I didn't realize it was the last meeting. I was like, I just met these ladies, and now I'm not going to see them until September. But everybody in the group was so welcoming." She said one of her favorite aspects of the club has been the mentoring from the longtime members who are seasoned gardeners. "I think it was last April or May, there was a call for helpers in the Rose Garden at Capron Park to do the spring pruning. And I'd never pruned rose bushes. I was a little nervous about it," she said. "There were a whole bunch of women, and they got right to work and showed me what to do. And by the end of a couple of hours, the garden looked great. I had a lot more confidence about how to prune rose bushes." Resident Michelle Lundquist, 58, who works in finance, said it was her mother, a member of the garden club for more than 10 years, who inspired her to join. "She always had an interest in gardening, and I always kidded that I did too, but I was labor and she was design," Lundquist said. "I did the heavy lifting stuff." She said one of her favorite aspects of the group is how open-minded the members are and its evolution over time in terms of expanding topics discussed and putting more focus on sustainability. "You learn a lot from other people from all walks of life," she said, "and they just crack me up. They have great stories and great perspectives, and they're very supportive of each other." She said, in addition to gaining immense knowledge from senior members, her contributions, along with some younger members, have been acquainting the group with more up-to-date technology, such as helping them begin a social media presence and taking credit cards at the flower sale to increase revenue, as opposed to just cash and checks. The club is in the process of planning a plethora of events and educational opportunities in celebration of the anniversary. This year, the Garden Club is donating 3 native trees to Highland Park, a red bud, a shad blow, and a sourwood. Gary Eppy said that in honor of past members of the club, one is in the celebration of the 70th anniversary, and one is in the celebration of Arbor Day on April 24th. "I'm very excited about the potential for Highland Park," Gary Eppy said. "That has the ability to become a spectacular natural landscape." Lundquist agreed. "I can remember it was a golf course growing up as a kid, so it's interesting to see it change and to be this great space for everyone to enjoy," she said, adding the group has done extensive work to help transform and maintain the park over the years. "That's where I think the group has sustained itself. It hasn't stagnated, being open to doing all these different projects and new ideas." The club is also hosting its annual plant sale from 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, May 2nd, at Capron Park's Newell Shelter, a historic open-air structure featuring a red tile roof and prominent archways. The sale offers a variety of plants, including annuals, perennials, herbs, shrubs, and trees, Gary Eppy said. The event will include a penny social table offering various raffles, a craft table, and a new-to-you table with used garden items such as trowels, shovels, clay, and ceramic garden pots, and other garden implements. The proceeds will go towards beautification of the city's gardens, including Gilbert Perry Square in downtown. "The turnout for that event is always huge," Bender said. "It's mostly women, or maybe the reluctant husbands, And they're so excited to just start planting and be around so many like-minded people who love to grow things and keep things alive. Gariepi said she always enjoyed going to other members' houses and having them over to hers, including for special Pie Day. Pie Day is when I bake apple pie, blueberry pie, chocolate cream pie, and we talk about planning for the plant sale, she said. She said she is also eager for the club's upcoming flowers tour on Saturday, June 13th. Five different garden club members with unique gardens open up them to allow people to learn about and explore their distinctive landscapes. One member, she said, has a water garden which typically features aquatic plants in a body of water, such as a small pond. One has a bog garden featuring mature perennials and trees. One is a shade garden featuring a plethora of native species that thrive in shade. One is a cottage garden with a contemplative labyrinth in the back. And the last one is Gariepi's, which features perennial gardens, fruit trees, and an herb garden. The tour is open to the public, and tickets can be purchased via the Garden Club's Facebook page, as well as at the plant sale. All proceeds from the flower tours go towards Garden Club's scholarship fund, which it gives to an Attleboro High School senior who is attending college to study agriculture, horticulture, or environmental studies. It's not only about the members who want education, Gariepi said of the Garden Club. It's about helping your town. It's that want to make the world a little bit better. Pope Leo says he does not fear Trump, citing gospel as he pushes back in feud over Iran war. By Will Wiesert, Josh Boak, and Nicole Winfield of the Associated Press. U.S.-born Pope Leo the 14th pushed back Monday on President Donald Trump's broadside against him over the U.S.-Israel war in Iran, telling reporters that the Vatican's appeals for peace and reconciliation are rooted in the gospel and that he doesn't fear the Trump administration. To put my message on the same plane as what the president has attempted to do here, I think, is not understanding what the message of the gospel is, Leo told the Associated Press, aboard the papal plane en route to Algeria. And I'm sorry to hear that, but I will continue on what I believe is the mission of the church in the world today. History's first U.S.-born pope stressed that he is not making a direct attack against Trump or anyone else with his general appeal for peace and criticisms of the delusion of omnipotence that is fueling the Iran war and other conflicts around the world. I will not enter into debate. The things that I say are certainly not meant as attacks on anyone. The message of the gospel is very clear. Blessed are the peacemakers, Leo said. I will not shy away from announcing the message of the gospel and inviting all people to look for ways of building bridges of peace and reconciliation, and looking for ways to avoid war anytime that's possible. Speaking to other reporters, he added, I'm not afraid of the Trump administration or of speaking out loudly about the message of the gospel, which is what the church works for. We are not politicians. We do not look at foreign policy from the same perspective that he may have, the Pope said, adding, I will continue to speak out strongly against war, seeking to promote peace, promoting dialogue, and multilateralism among states to find solutions to problems. Too many people are suffering today. Too many innocent people have been killed. And I believe someone must stand up and say that there's a better way, he said. Trump delivered an extraordinary broadside against Leo on Sunday night, saying he didn't think the U.S.-born global leader of the Catholic Church is doing a very good job and that he's a very liberal person, while also suggesting the pontiff should stop catering to the radical left. Flying back to Washington from Florida, Trump used a lengthy social media post to sharply criticize Leo, then kept it up after deplaning in comments on the tarmac to reporters. "I'm not a fan of Pope Leo," he said. Trump's comments came after Leo suggested that over the weekend that a delusion of omnipotence is fueling the U.S.-Israel war on Iran. While it's not unusual for popes and presidents to be at cross purposes, it's exceedingly rare for the pope to directly criticize a U.S. leader. And Trump's stinging response is equally uncommon, if not more so. "Pope Leo is weak on crime and terrible for foreign policy," the president wrote in his post, adding, "I don't want a pope who thinks it's okay for Iran to have a nuclear weapon." Italian politicians across the spectrum showed their solidarity with Leo. Premier Giorgia Meloni sent a message of support for his peace mission, while the leader of the main opposition party, Elie Schlein, was more direct, calling Trump's attacks extremely serious. Trump repeated that sentiment in comments to reporters, saying, "We don't like a pope who says it's okay to have a nuclear weapon." Later, Trump posted a picture suggesting he had saint-like powers akin to those of Jesus Christ. Wearing a biblical-style robe, Trump is seen laying hands on a bedridden man as light emanates from his fingers, while a soldier, a nurse, a praying woman, and a bearded man in a baseball cap all look on admiringly. The sky above is filled with eagles, an American flag, and vaporous images. All that came after Leo presided over an evening prayer service at St. Peter's Basilica on Saturday, the same day the United States and Iran began face-to-face negotiations in Pakistan during a fragile ceasefire, with Vice President J.D. Vance leading the U.S. delegation. Vance is a Catholic and recently released a book about his faith. During his evening prayer service, the Pope didn't mention the United States or Trump by name, but his tone and message appeared directed at Trump and U.S. officials, who have boasted of U.S. military superiority and justified the war in religious terms. That's all the time we have. Thank you for listening to the Talking Information Center and the Attleboro Sun Chronicle today.